Pay. Oh, you better believe it. So what is the real history behind what I just talked about? Well, I just gave you the history of what happened in the state of Virginia. What happened elsewhere? Now, this is going to require me to say things that are going to anger to no end, to the point of hate mail coming my way, kingdude at mikechurch.com, threats of subscriptions being canceled and what have you here. It does matter, and I'm just trying to get to the truth here. It's important to be on the side of the truth. If you don't have your facts straight, how can you possibly get to a conclusion or analyze something properly so that you can propose a solution? I hold here in my hands an essay that was written by, back in 2009, by Martin, or by Marion T. Horvat, Ph.D. I wonder if she's related to John Horvat. Anyways, the title of the piece is, now here comes the first shock. By the way, if you're listening on our live preview channel, which is commercial-free from now till Christmas, welcome aboard. You can stop by our chat room on my website at mikechurch.com. Click Mike Church Show Live Chat, top of the page. Introduce yourself as a new listener brought in by listening to the preview channel. Marion T. Horvat, Ph.D. Let none dare call it liberty, the Catholic Church in colonial America. I know. Mayor Church, please, I'm leaving. They're running for the hill like little school. Yes, I know. The dresses are up and they're running. You don't want to hear this. Turn the YouTube off right now. I'm telling you, you don't want to hear it. Relatively little attention has been paid to the relentless hostility toward the Catholics of our 13 English colonies in the period that preceded the American Revolution. Instead, historians tended to concentrate only on the story of the expansion of the teeny Catholic community of 1785, which possessed no bishop and hardly 25 priests, into the mighty organization we see today that spreads its branches from the Atlantic to the Pacific. To show this progress of Catholicism is good and legitimate, but to avoid presenting the persecution the church suffered in the pre-revolution colonial period is to offer an incomplete or partial history. It ignores the early story of our Catholic ancestors. It would be like describing the history of the church only after the Edict of Milan, when the church emerged from the catacombs, dude, pretending there had never been a glorious but terrible period of martyrdom. It should not be surprising that this clouded general omission concerning Catholicism in the colonial period, that's 1600 through 1775, should have settled over the Catholic milieu, given the optimistic accounts written by such notable Catholic historians as John Gill Marischea, Thomas Maynard, Theodore Romer, and Thomas McAvoy. These historians, whose works provided the foundation for school history books up until recently, only briefly acknowledge and downplay a period of repression and persecution. And then she just goes in to dish the facts about what actually happened. English hatred for the Roman Church, the civilization and culture which laid the foundations of the American colonies, were English and Protestant. England's continuing 16th and 17th century religious revolutions is therefore central to an understanding of religious aspects of American colonization. Early explorers were sent out toward the end of the 15th century by a Catholic king, Henry VII, but actual settlement was delayed, and only in 1607 under James I were permanent roots put down at Jamestown. And then she gets into some more of the history, and then there's the penal age, there's Catholicism in Maryland and in New York and in Pennsylvania. And then her conclusion is this: This phase of strong, blatant persecution of Catholicism came to a close during the revolutionary era of 1763 to 1820. For various reasons, the outbreak of hostilities and the winning of independence forced Protestant Moroccans to at least officially temper their hostility toward Catholicism. How do you like that? You know, I open my mouth and I say, extra ecclesiam nulla salus. You're a hater. You divider. You. And that's not even true. Your own church doesn't believe it. It better.
Yeah, well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
For various reasons, the outbreak of hostilities and the winning of independence forced Protestant Americans to at least officially temper their hostility toward Catholicism. With the relaxation of penal measures against them, Catholics breathed a great sigh of relief, a normal and legitimate reaction. However, instead of maintaining a Catholic behavior consistent with the purity of their holy faith, many of them adopted a practical way of life that effectively ignored or downplayed the points of Catholic doctrine which Protestantism has had attacked. This is the chief point here, and the reason I brought it up. They also closed their eyes to the evil of the Protestant heresy and its mentality. Such an attitude is explained by the natural desire to achieve social and economic success. It is nonetheless a shameless attitude with regard to the glory of God and the doctrine that the Catholic Church is the only true religion. These psychological factors help to explain the first phase of the establishment among our Catholic ancestors of that heresy which Pope Leo XIII called Americanism. Now, I bring this up specifically to the charge of separation of church and state. As I wrote today on my website at mikechurch.com, if you're going to have a conversation about separation of church and state, you've got to define the term. You must define the terms, Brother Francis was telling. What are the terms? Okay, what was the church at that time? What was the state? They're easy to define. I do so in a couple of sentences at mikechurch.com, today's pile of prep. Church, obviously, was not the Church of Rome. It was not the Catholic Church. It didn't have a hierarchy. It did not, here's the important part, it did not have a single, solitary, universal, unified teaching on morals, which is the principal role and the principal thing that the church guards with her life and with love and charity. If that's missing, and it was, well, then what possible foundation for what church could you possibly have that would not make it hostile to the faith? And therefore, look, I can get to this conclusion from several different ways. I just chose this route for today. Therefore, was there a separation of church and state? Yes. Is there one? Yes. We're told every day that there is by people that deny it. They deny it when it's convenient to them, but they say, oh, you keep your religion out of our political discussion. The two are separate. Oh, you mean separation of church and state. Because you see, folks, what you basically have there, and this is just the pathetic state of catechism in North America today, when you say church and state or separation of church and state, you're saying, you're recognizing the two perfect human entities. Church, state. Which one should always prevail in a matter of morals? If the issue at hand is a moral teaching, which one should always prevail? If you answered state, congratulations, you're in on it. If you answered church, congratulations, and get ready for the persecution to continue. And get ready for the disappointment to continue. So the only thing you can contain yourself with is having your own little state, which is your family, maybe even your church community, to extend it out a little bit further, and then not having the separation. Instead, ensuring that the order is correct. And the one that should prevail does prevail. And it ain't the state. And it certainly ain't the American state. How red, white, and blue is that for you today?